Nice to be back, and today we've been, I think you people already read the passage that's from John 5. Now, I'm going to, I hope we'll be able to do something a little bit different from what we usually do. I'm going to ask you to participate in reading the passage together. Okay, that's good. All right. Now, the passage that you'll be read is basically a very simple story, and many of you already know about the story. So what I would do is that's the passage, and we can read the story, but we can read the story in different ways, at least three ways. Okay. Now, one, of course, read it like a documentary, like newspaper, you know, and you can, because there are a lot of details in the story, very lots of details. We're talking about this man that was crippled or paralyzed, and do we know how old he was? We read the passage. Do you know how old he was?
28.
At least 38. We don't know how old he is. I only ask tricky questions, okay? All right. So and so we'll go through the details of the time and the place and character and so on. But we can also read it as a drama because it has its climax and anticlimax. And it started with a healing, and at the end it was talking about killing. People were trying to kill Jesus. So it's not a straightforward story. And the hero, supposed to be Jesus, treating the people, curing the person, and then somehow he was labeled as like a villain, and you know, they wanted to kill him. And yet at the end, there sounds like there's a doctrinal debate, trying to decide who can determine what is allowed on Sabbaths. Now, I hope that I can help you to start reading the Bible stories, and yet see the different layers. Okay, we can just read it very superficially, and that's not a bad thing, because you need to start from the top, from the first layer. Okay, before I get to that, okay, because we talk about details of time, I ask you about the person's age. Now, you all have this in your hand, okay? It says, sometime later. And then, where did this happen? Jerusalem. Which part of Jerusalem?
The good part.
It's called a place called, there's a pool, and it's called a sheep gate area. Now, I'm not being particular about these details, but what I wanted you to know, this is not a make-believe story, because they can provide you all the details. Okay? Now, when we see details like this, I start reading it like a documentary, because make-believe stories, you don't need to tell, you know, sometime later Jesus went to Jerusalem. You just say, well, once upon a time there was a pool. That's good enough. And you don't need to tell people that the name of the pool in Arabic is called Bethesda. No need to give you those details. Those are superfluous. No need. Because you want to get right to the core of the story, the point. But when it's a true story, the author is able to give you all the details. And that's important. Not so much you remember the details, but you know there are details, because it's not a make-believe stories. Now, and Jesus went up there for one of the Jewish festivals. Now, let me just say, this festival was not the Passover festival. Okay, and I'll try to prove that to you later. It's probably what they call the Festival of the Tents. And this is a celebration or remembrance of the time when the Israelites lived in the tents, and when they were in the desert. So they were remembering the deliverance from Egypt. When they were still slaves, when they were delivered out of Egypt, when they were still traveling in the desert. But the point about that festival was not, it's not just a festival. This passage started hinting at something else, and we'll get to that. So, who are the characters? Well, Jesus, of course, and this person who was more than 38 years old, and he's quite an old man, right? According to many of you, he's an old man. But hey, okay, no, he's not. Okay. But what happened to him? He's been, in today's term, wheelchair bound. Just crippled. And there was no one to help him. And when Jesus saw him, Jesus asked a very redundant question. Do you want to get well? What kind of question is this? You can, you know, if I go to the intensive care and ask my patient, do you want to get well? They would look at me, what kind of doctor are you? You know, where were you trained? I mean, where did you get your certificate? I mean, it's a redundant question, it's basically a stupid question. But that was an icebreaker. This person who'd been sick or crippled for 38 years was getting used to be crippled after 38 years. Now, it may sound strange, but imagine, after 38 years, you will get used to a different kind of lifestyle. And for him to give up the lifestyle that he used to is very different. Now, I saw this video clip not too long ago in China, from China rather, and talking about someone who was born with arms. But she can wash her face with her feet. She can write. She can even brush her teeth. I can't do that with this. And she actually is a mother of two. She was able to raise two kids without arms, just legs. Because all along she'd been trained to use her feet for those things. So after 40 years, that's no big deal for her. Do you want to get well? That's an icebreaker, and yet it just say you are getting very used to, or this person is getting very used to his condition. And then, in terms of characters, of course, those were the Jewish leaders. When the Jewish leaders saw this man walking, they were not surprised that he was walking, but they were surprised he was carrying something. They should be surprised by the fact that he's walking. But they were, what attracted them most was not the person, was the mat. You say, why do you say this? Well, let's bring on the question they asked him. What did he ask him? What did they ask him? They didn't ask him, who healed you? No. They ask, who told you to pick up the mat? What kind of question is this? Now, I already told you there was a stupid question. Okay, a redundant question. Do you want to get well? Now there's another silly question. Who told you to pick up a mat? Now, I want you to start appreciating the story. Not just, oh, this is another healing miracle. Wow, no big deal. Jesus did a lot of miracles. No. I want you to start digging into the passage. Start thinking what this passage really trying to tell us. From the questions, from the characters, okay? And this is the problem with this Jewish leaders is that they knew, they had decided among themselves. According to the Jewish tradition, no one's supposed to work on Sabbaths. Well, that was a given. But then, that was part of Ten Commandments. But the problem is, who decides, who defines what is work? Well, you say, how about doing the computer? Is that work? No, I'm just playing a game. I'm just playing Mario. I'm playing whatever, servers, whatever. That's a game. So how do you define work? So they decided to make a long list of do's and don'ts, which includes you're not supposed to walk beyond a certain distance. You're not supposed to go up certain flights of stairs. If you go above certain flights of stairs, then you're wrong. This is a joke, I'm sure. The joke was about this Jewish man, a very, very devout Jewish person, and he had to take an elevator from 1 to the 14th floor in a hotel. But that was the Sabbath. You can't do that. So what did he do? Well, you go to 1 to 5 first, get out, come back, press another button, get to another, 9th floor and so on. So you have to break it into segments in order to do that. That's the rule. That's the way they define it. And this is part of the problem. This is exactly what the problem is there. And then later, there was this argument, this argument about who can decide what can be done on Sabbaths. But I want you to understand, this story, I'm peeling it one layer at a time for you, from the documentary to the drama to the doctrinal thing. Now, but the doctrinal debate, or the main part of the story, and would you say that the main focus of the story, happened after the healing, not before. It was after. This story, besides, this story has got two key points. The first one is that it looks like healing on the surface, but it's at the end, it's talking about who can decide on Sabbath day. Second point is not about the power of Jesus, but it's about the identity of Jesus. Okay, those two key points. The identity. It's not really talking about what Jesus can do. Of course he can heal people. But it's not the point. The point is stating the identity. But I want you to remember the word after. This story is the one, there's a before and there's an after. It's like a good end, before and after. Okay, all right. Now, why do I emphasize this before and after? Now, when we study a passage like this, I want you to give you a bigger picture. The Gospel of John is a book of progression. A book of progression. It's before and after. The very first four chapters of John, we won't be reading that, but that's the four chapters. Raise it a little bit? That's good, thank you. That's good. Now, the first four chapters of John, someone read chapter one, the message. But very quickly, in chapter one, of John, it talks about John the Baptist. Well, John the Baptist, as you know, the forerunner of Christ, comes and tells, Jesus is coming. Okay, all right. And he, of course, is a Jewish person. He's a very, very close friend or cousin, possibly, of Jesus. And then, second person is Nicodemus. Nicodemus was a Jewish rabbi, very Jewish, and is very knowledgeable, okay? Not as close to Christ as John the Baptist, but still very, very Jewish, okay? And then thirdly, chapter 4, stuff comes about this Samaritan woman at the well. And the Samaritan, of course, is a hybrid, okay? And it's not a purebred, okay? So she was half Jewish, half Gentile. So you can see the progression. Someone very close to Jesus, someone very close to the Jewish faith, someone not as close to the Jewish faith. And then chapter 4 talks about a centurion who's a Roman, a Gentile. Now, I hope you see the progression. John, the gospel, is famous for this progression. From the center, further apart, John the Baptist, and then Nicodemus, Samaritan woman, the centurion. And as a matter of fact, John, the Gospel of John revolves around three Passovers. Now, Jesus came out for public ministry when he was 30. And he served how many years? 3 years. So in the 3 years' time of his public ministry, there were three Passovers, once a year. So three Passovers. And John, the Gospel, actually was written revolving those three Passovers. So this is very easy to remember, John, the Gospel. Those three Passovers. And the first Passover story involves the Passover festival, rather, involves the four stories that I just told you about: John the Baptist, Nicodemus, the Samaritan woman, and the Roman centurion. That's the first part. It involves the first Passover. And then after that, the second one, and then you can see how very, very structured. Four stories of faith, four parables of faith. I'm talking about I'm the heavenly bread, I'm the living water, and so on. Okay, and at the end, the last Passover, the four roles of Jesus. Jesus played four roles, and then after his resurrection, he was giving the final reminders, saying that I'll be departing, I'll be leaving you people. He was preparing his disciples before his departure, but the three Passovers. In other words, if you read the Gospel of John, one block, and one block. Three blocks. Three Passovers. The strange thing is, or the interesting is, there is a link between the first and the second block, and there's another link between this and this. Okay? There's two links. There are two links. And this link and that link. Okay? And we'll get to those links in a second. Now, I'm rearranging the tables just now. Okay, the first four chapters I told you about the four stories of faith. Okay, I pushed the four parables of faith over here and the four rules and so on. Okay, that's starting the second Passover and the third. Okay, now the links. There were two links, two festival links. The first one is the one that we just read, the festival of the tents, and that's the passage we read today. Okay, and that highlights Jesus, the Lord of Sabbath. And then there's another link talking about the temple dedication. That's the second temple, not the first temple. Okay, all right. But never mind. Just remember, there was this before, and this is the after. John, the gospel, is very much a gospel of before and after. Before and after. Okay. What do I mean by before and after? Before is, what I mean by before is that Jesus tells the people, come unto me, come, come. But after they have come to Jesus, after they realize who Jesus was, after they have met Jesus, and for example, this passage talking about this person, after he was healed, then comes the after. Then comes the after. Now, I want you to grasp this concept of before and after. Okay, let me give you another example. The prodigal son. The prodigal son, the story of the prodigal son. This second son, son number two, he likes to play, and he likes to do his own things and so on. Okay, so he got his share of the inheritance. He went away and spent everything, spent all his pennies. And when he was hungry, when he was stuck, he thought about his father. Because his stomach was hungry, making noises. He had to. He came back. The father welcomed him. And we all know that story. Let me give you a trace of that story. So he ate that welcome meal. That was a big feast. Big feast. Everybody was happy and so on, except brother number one. Everybody was happy. Okay. And then after the dinner, this son number two says, Daddy, it was very nice of you to welcome me back. I'm going to say goodnight to you now. I'm going back to my friends. Thank you very much for the nice rope. And thank you very much for the shoes and so on, and nice shoes of nice runners and so on. But I'm going back to my friends now. Would that make sense to you? Did he really return? Did he really go home? No. Going home means he's staying. We assume that. Staying is after. Coming home is before. I want you to understand that's the difference. Why is that difference is important? Because many, many Christians, I'm talking about application now, many, many Christian churches, Chinese churches included, we talk about spreading the gospel. We're asking people to come. But there's no after. To come. Come unto me. We talk about coming, but we don't talk about staying. What do we do? This prodigal someone, he stays. When he stays with his dad, he has to learn how to get along with his dad. He could not say, I need a pass. I'm going out to my friends. No, he can't do that. So far, okay? Before and after? Okay. No. I'm going to make it even deeper. Let's layer it. Okay. The first part, coming home, the before, is legal in nature. Because the father welcomed him, allowed him to stay. It's like a judge telling a criminal, okay, someone else paid your penalty. Now you can go home. You can go. You can leave. You're free. Because someone paid your penalty. That's the legal thing. That's before. But the after thing is like the father telling this convict, now you can stay because you're my son. The first part says, you leave because you're free. The second one says, you can stay because you're my son. Before and after. Now, this is very much a story, and this happens to be a very, very important story, linking the before and the after. If we get that concept, then you know how to read the whole Gospel of John in a very meaningful way, in a different way. Because the first four chapters tells us, come, even if you're a Gentile, come. Even if you're a hybrid, half Jewish, come, and so on. But then this part tells you, after you've come, after you claim you're a Christian, this is the way you live. It's not a trap. The father does not welcome the son, the prodigal son home, just to trap him. That wouldn't make sense. That's the problem with a lot of Christians. They think, oh, coming to church is one thing, but you want me to do this? You want me to follow Jesus from now on? That's a trap. We think of, if you think it's a trap, you don't understand salvation. Okay, quickly then. At the end, there was this passage, actually, if you read carefully, there was the word later. Occurred twice. The first verse says, sometime later. And then verse 14, later. Jesus found him. When the Jewish people ask this handicapped person, the one who was wheelchair bound, let me put it that way, ask him, who told you you can pick up a mat and walk? He said, I don't know. No, I want you to realize this was not, and I emphasize not, this was not a story of faith. Because he did not even know Jesus. He cannot say, I believe in Jesus. He did not even know Jesus. How can he believe in Jesus? I don't know. I don't know who healed me. It was later Jesus found him. He didn't find Jesus. Jesus found him. And then Jesus found him and told him, hey, it was me that healed you. But from now on, sin no more. Otherwise, something worse might happen. So Jesus telling him, from now on, this is the after. From now on, there was a before. From now on, this is the after. From now on, you can stay, but you have to learn how to get along with God the Father. That's the after. The Jewish leaders were still hung up about this question, who can decide on what people is allowed to do on Sabbath? Who can decide? Why is that question so important? Why is that question so important? This is the thing, and I want you to remember this. The answer to that question will determine who runs your life. What you are allowed to do for the Jewish people, that is. What you're allowed to do on Sabbath, that person has to be God. Because God instituted Sabbath. God started Sabbath. So who determines what you can allow to do on Sabbath is the one which runs your life. That's the creator. Now, that's the key point of Genesis chapter 1 and 2 about creation. Genesis 1 and 2 is not talking about how God made this earth, this universe, and therefore it is about anti-evolution and so on. It's not. It's not. It really tells us, for those people who were reading Genesis in the first place, the first readers of Genesis, they have this concept. They said, whoever made me should be my Lord, should run my life. That's why who made me for them was so important, because whoever made me, I owe my life to him or her, for them. But that's the importance of creation. Now, the Jewish people know that. That's why when they say Sabbath to them reminds them of creation. Who controls the creation? Who was the creator? That's the person who rested on Sabbath. Now, rested does not mean God went to sleep. That's not what it means. He just stopped creating. But he was still sustaining. Okay, that's what Jesus was saying. My Father, that's God the Father, been working until today, meaning he never stopped. And I have been working too. Jesus, when he said that, he's equating himself with God. And the Jewish people knew that right away. Right away. Should I say, we do not keep the Sabbath holy. Rather, it's the Sabbath that keeps us holy. The Sabbath purposely intrudes our daily routine. Once every 7 days. Intrudes our routine. It says we have to break our routine so that we will be reminded we actually are creatures. We are not the creator. We're the creatures. And being so, when we stop and remember our creator, we become closer to him. That's the definition of holy. Closer to God. It's not suddenly I don't smoke, I don't take marijuana, I don't do this, I don't do that. It's not that, not the definition of holy. Holy is closer to God. At the end of the day, and this miracle story tells us, it's not the power of God that's going to affect us as much as the identity of Jesus. How you relate to Jesus, that's going to decide who runs your life. I'm not here going to tell you now you have to be here every Sunday on time. I hope you'll be on time every Sunday and so on and so forth. Okay? Because it's Sabbath and because it's so on. No. I want you to realize coming here is not to meet some nice people. Well, I know there are a lot of several nice people here. You're not here just to meet Roy. You're not here just to meet Alex. You're not just here to meet Cecil. And those nice people, I mean, it's good that you would like to meet them. But you're here to meet God. Now, remember this person, this cripple. In the beginning, he believed in, I call it a superstition. The superstition is this. If the water in the pool got stirred, if at that moment there was someone who can take me into the water, I'll be healed. If I were the first one, it's not first come, first serve. It's only the first one gets served. It's that kind of story. Okay, so it's that thing that's the story. So he is saying, well, there's no one to take care of me to get into the water. Why the water gets stirred? Possibly the river or the pool, yeah, there's the river or even the canal. The people, there may be water coming from different catchment areas, and there are certain areas that water may contain. This is a theory that's not mentioned in the Bible. It may be contain sulfur. And that may merge it, and when it rushes down, the water gets stirred. And if people get into the water with the sulfur, they would get what? Get healed. With the skin diseases, they would get healed. Okay? So that's the tradition. That was the understanding. But it could also be superstition. Why do I think, make a big deal of this? I have some very good friends who are Catholics. I'm nothing against Catholics. And I have some very good friends. And they're very religious. One of them, recently I talked to him, and I asked him, what have you been up to? What did you do recently? Well, he said, we went to the Holy Spirit. I said, well, that's very nice. Did you just go for sightseeing? No. We went there to help some crippled people. Oh, I said, wow, that's amazing. What did you do there? I know he was not a doctor. We take the wheelchair people, bound people, to the Bethesda pool. Now, the Bethesda pool does not really exist now. It's causing ants, doesn't matter. Okay, this is different, but they still label it as the same thing. So this group of Catholic people, being very religious, they would do this good deed by willing, taking people in a wheelchair to that particular pool, hoping, now I don't know if they still wait for the water to be stirred or just get the water to sprinkle on them and so on, but they still think that water has some magical power that can cure people, they take care of them. So there are people who are still very, I quote, superstitious, that this water is the point, is the key. This crippled person was living on the basis of that superstition at first. Later, the Jewish people tell them, hey, don't base your religion, your faith on that superstition, on the tradition. Based on this, what we're telling you that you can do and so on. A second, deeper layer, deeper level. But Jesus said, no. It's not the rules that you follow. It's who Jesus is, the identity of Jesus. Now, you get to be coming to this church for how many years? I don't know. Some of you may be here, even this morning, because of superstition, thinking it's good to be in a church. It's good to be associated with a church. It's good to be associated with Christians. Maybe. But I hope you move from that level to another level to realize, to understand who Jesus really is. It's not what he can do for you. Not just the power. But who he is. And he's being the one who can actually keep you holy, keep you close to God. It's not keeping the Sabbath that will make you holy. It won't. I'm going to use a story to conclude my talk. During my training, medical training, there were times that I had to work in the intensive care. Now this is in Winnipeg. And by rotation, sometimes you're on call on Saturday, sometimes you're on call on Sunday. So, and that Sunday, I was on call. I was in charge, I was not in charge, but I was working in the intensive care. Now, it so happened in the intensive care, there was a Chinese patient. And that Chinese patient happened to be a member of my home church in Winnipeg. And he was a cripple. He had a car accident and had an injury to his spine, leaving him paralyzed from his waist down. So he'd been wheelchair bound for a long time. Not only that, his chest also weakened, so he couldn't breathe very well, and there are times he could not cough very well. So whenever he gets an infection, the secretions get stuck and will pull down in his lungs, and he gets pneumonia. And that time when he was in the intensive care, it was because he had an infection, a chest infection, and that infection, the throat infection, and that spread down and went into his chest, and he had a bad bout of pneumonia. So we had to intubate him. We put a lot of tubes and so on. We had to use a machine to help him to breathe, and we had to keep suctioning the secretions out. So he was sick. He was sick. And he had X number of tubes, IVs, and so on and so forth. That morning was a Sunday. I finished all the work that I was supposed to do. We don't have a very big intensive care. We have about 15 patients there. Maybe 20 beds, but we have about 50 patients. So we took care of those things first. And then I went into this room. It was in isolation, so I had to gown and so on. I went to the room and talked to this brother. His name was Sam. So I talked to him, but he couldn't talk to me. Why? He got the tubes in his throat. He couldn't talk. So I talked to him. I said, Sam, if you could hear what I'm saying, blink your eyes 3 times in a row. That's about a signal. So that he understood me. I'm getting through to him. I said, understand. And then I jokingly told him, Sam, I'm the guest speaker. I'm going to be preaching to you today. And I did. I don't remember what I said. It was a very, very brief, maybe 5 minutes or so. You know what? We really felt the presence of God. Really. I've never been so happy in an isolation room. I've never been so happy to be a guest speaker. It's not where you are. It's who is with you. Whom are you worshiping? It's the identity. That morning, we had an excellent time of fellowship. Well, he couldn't argue with me anyway. But blinking his eyes was sufficient. So I just want to summarize by saying this story about a healing, but it's a very unusual healing. We can read it as a documentary, we can read and look at it as a drama, but basically, it's, at the end, it's a doctrinal debate. And it's not about whether Jesus could or had the power to heal. Of course he had. It was more of a question whether Jesus had the right to decide what people can do on Sabbath. That, to the Jewish people, would determine whether he actually is God. And they realized Jesus claiming he was God, they wanted to kill him because that's blasphemy. They knew he's not God. They said, no, you're just a son of Joseph. We know who the God, we know the carpenter Joseph. We know Mary. You're not. That's blasphemy. Through that, emphasis who Jesus was. It links the first part of John's gospel to the rest of it. The first part says, come unto me. The rest, the after, said, you can stay because you're my son. Let's pray. Our heavenly God, thank you for speaking to us through your word. Help every one of us here this morning that we are not here just because of superstition. We're not here just because hearsays. We're not here because of some big make-believe stories. But we're here to worship the God who created the universe. And yet this is the same God who came and suffered on the cross for us. Help us to know you in a personal way. We pray all this in the name of Jesus Christ. Amen. Thank you.